Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, DC and RC. For the best preview of UFC 264, highlighted by the main event of Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor, check out ESPN's brand new DC and RC podcast, hosted by former UFC champion Daniel Cormier and UFC superfan Ryan Clark. Yes, that Ryan Clark you've seen covering the NFL after his playing days. That's DC and RC. Follow It and the Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the final chapter in the rivalry between Justin Poirier and Conor McGregor will be written Saturday, July 10th at UFC 264. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99. Visit ESPNPlus.com/PPV. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is the long-awaited return of Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on, man?
Oh, my gosh. I'm nervous. Like, there's so much stuff that happened while we were gone, and I feel like the world deserves to hear all of my thoughts, but I don't think they're going to get them all.
No, we got 45 minutes, right? Like, that was the thing. Like, so much happened in the 2 weeks that I was out of here, and then Giannis got hurt. I guess he back. Like, I had already planned out what we were going to talk about for this show before Giannis, and so I was like, oh, Giannis is hurt, NBA Finals. Not even really nothing we got to talk about. Not because I wasn't going to watch them or not because I didn't think they could be good. It just wasn't a whole lot to talk about except for being sad. You know what I'm saying? Like all there was is like, damn, what could have been?
I remember we did HQ the morning of game one.
We
and
did.
I remember I was like, y'all just going to play. And you was like, you see what happened to his knee? And then I said, well, I'm an athlete. And I know that we do dumb stuff like go out there on hyperextended knee.
Well, dog, that's what it was because I turned it back to you because it was you and Golic, right? And I was like, athlete guys, y'all really think he gonna play? Because I'm thinking you, as experts on the human body, will be looking at that and being like, nah, there's no way he could play. Instead, y'all were like, oh, no, he's gonna play. And what do you know? He played. And I kind of feel like, though, it's like we was both right, both wrong type situations because actually I was all wrong because he looked fine. Like, you know, after game one, and just to let people know, we're doing this in advance, so you know what I'm saying. Like, if game two involves, like, I don't know, the biggest fist fight in the world, I apologize. Somebody else going to have to talk to you. I'm moving this weekend, you dig? But I thought the conference finals, I mean, the Trae Young injury was the one that was just like, okay, like, there's nothing really left for us to really observe here or to find to be interesting. Chris Paul in the NBA finals, we got to figure out if you like him or not, right? Like, you really like Chris Paul when you're watching him play basketball and do excellent basketball things. And he's doing stuff for charity. Them cute little commercials, you know what I'm saying? All of that. But people really don't like Chris Paul all the way. So if they win, we're going to act like Chris Paul's our best friend. And if they lose, whoo, baby, we going to kill them.
Everyone knows a Chris Paul. I think that's part of it, too. Maybe not everyone knows a Chris Paul. Maybe I just know a Chris Paul from growing up. Like, there's always, it feels like me, and he's not a short guy in life. But in the NBA, in that ecosystem, he's a short guy. But I remember very clearly, like hyper-competitive little dudes that just were kind of annoying and know-it-all-y. Like, nothing about Chris Paul's, like, public persona or basketball persona, like, seems like redeeming qualities. But somehow you put it all together and we wrap it up in this cute storyline. He gets old enough, and now everybody's on Chris Paul's side.
Here's what I could imagine Chris Paul saying. Like, if I try to imagine something Chris Paul would say out loud is this, 5'11 and 3/4". He ain't short in real life. He ain't tall in real life neither. You know what I mean? Like, he's just right there. Like, he's this close to the roller coaster. You know what I'm saying? 5'11 and 3/4". He out there in the summer wearing the thickest socks you ever seen. Just trying to get himself a quarter inch, because he tired of y'all talking to him like that. Actually, the funniest thing I've ever seen involving Chris Paul, and this is not to hate on Chris Paul, but this is still hilarious. The Lakers and the Clippers are playing a game, and I want to say this is like 2013, because it was after Chris Paul had gotten there, but I forget what was going on. and Pau Gasol just being Pau Gasol, right? Always getting pushed around a little bit, but never taking it personally, you know, and all this. But something happened. I don't know what Chris Paul said to him. Pau Gasol walked past Chris Paul and patted him on the top of his head. Chris Paul was so heated. They asked him after the game, "You don't do nothing to me that I do to my son. You don't do nothing to me that I do to my son." And you know what that is? That's sub 6 foot talk right there. You don't hear nobody over 6 feet tall talk like that ever.
I think it's just his world, though, because I'm sub 6 feet too. And I like grew up in a different ecosystem. When you are a hooper, like at the level he was, he's always around 7 foot, 6'6", 6'10". That is a different experience, because if Chris Paul grew up to be Cliff Paul and he was as sure as a jester, like I don't think he would have this whole hang up. It's just that he lives in.
That's true, because you do got a real 5'9 vibe, right? See, that's the thing about you. Like, you don't have a 5'9 vibe. I got my homeboy Jamal. He heard me talk about this all the time. I've said this over the years on the podcast. Jamal 5'6, and I had no idea that Jamal was 5'6 because of the way he carried himself. But he doesn't carry himself in some old flashy, like, over the top sense, right? He carry himself like what he is, a black belt. You see what I'm saying? He is a black belt. I will never forget this. I've told this story many times also, but I'm going to tell it again because it really never gets old. I was hanging out with Jamal and a few of his partners, right? He was on the fencing team at North Carolina. I didn't know that there was a fencing team, but he was on the fencing team, and he was there with all his buddies. And if you saw a table of them, like, you might think they was nerds. Like, if you was watching in a movie and they were still in high school, like, you might think it's funny to swat the stuff off the table, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just here to tell you now, that movie would get very interesting, because them dudes would whoop your ass, because apparently they all know various forms of kung fu. And the moment I will always remember about us sitting in this restaurant on Franklin Street, and one of these dudes, I don't remember how it came up, I don't fully remember the context, I just remember it involved the phrase, "Yeah, I'm never doing the Navy SEAL workout again." I was like, again? Yeah. Again? I keep telling people, man, kung fu, that's the real anti-bullying right there. Like, every time I hear somebody put up an anti-bullying PSA, why don't we start giving kids scholarships to go learn some kung fu?
I think that, and maybe my theory is wrong, I'm sure the black belt helps, but for me, it was also like just being good at something. I think about this with my kids a lot too. It's like, having something to grab onto, and it's like, that's kind of your identity. And like, when you're growing up, at least for me, like I didn't get into a lot of the things that some of my friends were getting into, because my view of myself was like, I'm the football guy. I don't need to impress them. I'm the athlete. I don't need to fit in. I don't need to do the things that I don't want to do. And I don't need to act like some overbearing jerk because I'm actually insecure, because like, I can hold on to this because this is my thing. And I think that, you said I don't have a 5'9 attitude. Like, hey, I'm not 5'9.
Chris Paul ain't 5'9 neither. He got a 5'9 attitude, and he's really, really good at something that puts him in a position to feel like he's
5'9. But he's around other people like that. So my point is, I was that, and then I leave that world.
Yes.
And no matter where else I go, I can look at people and be like, I feel confident in all circles, because like, I'm great at something. Yes. And I imagine that Chris Paul is great at basketball, but so is everybody else he's around, and he's the short one.
It just becomes a reminder, and he gets on everybody's nerves in a way that only a 5'9 attitude. They're the only ones who can get you to this place. And look, I understand a lot of y'all are listening right now, and y'all are 5'9, and I'm just here to tell you, half of y'all are listening and are like, I mean, he ain't talking about me. And the other half are like, so is this how people feel about me? And to that second half, yeah, they do.
I feel like you can identify with Chris Paul, because I know at some point, like, you're obviously a very smart person, and at some point you had to learn how to talk to people.
Yes,
like I could guess. And I would imagine that Chris is also someone who is very smart, and particularly in this atmosphere. And it seemed like he ain't never learned how to talk to people, but he finally got old enough that people are willing to accept the way he talked to them, right?
Yes, yes. Well, he also, like, the biggest thing I learned in that regard is being right. It's a little bit overrated, right?
A lot overrated, and
I live a life that doesn't really involve me needing to win an argument about what we gonna do. You see what I'm saying? Like, I just don't have a lot of places where I need to come in and be like, no, this is the thing that we're going to do. Which, again, not the same as Chris Paul. Chris Paul, somebody daddy. Chris Paul, the dude in his family who make the most money, which then kind of puts you in a kind of charge of sorts. And Chris Paul likes to be in charge. Chris Paul was student body president when he was in high school. And all you got to do is look back on who you knew who did their job. They typically just like to be in charge of stuff. And now he's on a team where it's basically all kids, right? Like, there's nobody old enough to really like be like, damn, Chris Paul getting on my nerves. There's a bunch of dudes with Chris Paul posters when they was growing up.
Yeah, I get that point. And we could have a whole nother separate podcast about how family dynamics change when you are suddenly the 28-year-old breadwinner.
Like, oh, yeah.
That's a whole nother, it's a whole nother podcast that I don't know that I'm ready to share with these fine people. But at some point, you and I can have a phone call about what that does to a family. But that lesson is something that I learned when I was at the NBA Players Association. The lesson from the beginning that you were talking about is like being right is overrated. And it's like, I see it happen so many times. And it's also so much about your ego, like affecting change, managing people, leading people. Like, winning an argument is like the last thing you want to do, especially when you have a title or you have some role that gives you some prestige and cachet. Like, just coming in and outsmarting everybody, running circles around them, and then celebrating because you did it. Like, that ends up being counterproductive.
Well, what I think Chris Paul doesn't recognize is, and this I think is a very important skill in this, he doesn't recognize when somebody already knows they f***ing up, right? Yeah. Like when they already know it and they already are doing it to themselves over the fact, that's the part where he doesn't get. There's like something, you could be mad, but like you got to recognize when that person already knows.
I think you're wrong. I think you're close, but as someone who can identify with Chris Paul a little bit in this area, it's not that he doesn't know, it's that he want to make them admit it. That's the difference.
Right.
I've been in arguments with people professionally and personally where I see the light bulb goes on and they know that I'm right and they're ready to move on. But a younger me was like, nah, you about to tell everybody, like, this is going to be a blowout. I'm not winning by a field goal. I'm winning by three touchdowns.
Right, but I also think on that, because I got a little of that one too, right? But I think part of why I got it, though, and this is where I think you and I are similar in that regard. You tell me if I'm wrong. I'm always willing to be like you was right. And I'd be feeling like that's an unfair trade in life, dog. I do not get the reciprocity from the rest of y'all when it comes to just the simple admission. Like, yep, I got that one wrong, right? And you'd be like, can somebody just once, it's not even just once. That's not fair. But you know what I mean. Like, that's where, like I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this because that's how the game work, right?
Yeah.
And don't let me get a whiff that you know it and you just won't say it.
Oh, yeah.
I've had to just kind of get out of this business altogether, right? Like, you know, and I tell you what helped me with it, working this job. Because the last thing I want to do in my off time is argue with y'all about this stuff.
It feels like the unwritten rules of baseball to me, where it's like, we know this game is decided and your team is up by 8. You trying to hit home runs down at the count. But when I'm up by 8 on you, I'm going to go ahead and strike out, get this game over with. And like, it feels unfair. Like, now I'm whooping you. Go ahead.
Yes.
Step aside.
Yes. And if you want some more, it'll go from, I want you to tell me that you were wrong, to I'm going to make you feel this.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Oh,
and so, yeah, I'm about that game now. I'm about that game now.
I'm about that game
now. Yeah. And Chris Paul ain't there. We wanted to start with something like a little bit light for y'all, because we did kind of have something a little bit more weighty that we want to talk about. And this is what happened. We were out of here. And I actually, like, it feels trite to say that I thought that this was interesting and kind of fascinating. But like, you and I are on a group chat where we were talking about the tenor surrounding Jason Kidd and Chauncey Billups getting these head coaching jobs, right? And like, those two things kind of got mashed together because they felt kind of similar to people. They're different circumstances and different situations, but they also kind of like speak to the same situation. Like, yo, how much did the world change, right? 1997, I want you to keep that number in mind. I'm gonna come back to that later. 1997, Chauncey Billups was accused of committing a sexual assault along with Ron Mercer at Antoine Walker's house. The alleged victim was Antoine Walker's ex-girlfriend. I really advise you to look it up because it's a lot going on there, but the story is horrific. Like, what they got back on the physical exam, like, they were talking about injuries to everything. Like anything that you might think plausible to injure in a sexual assault, it's there, right? It seemed to be an awful situation. It went to a grand jury and Billups was not indicted. There was a lawsuit that was settled with confidential terms and this weird detail where Antoine Walker sued Mercer and Billups because Mercer and Billups said they weren't even at Antoine Walker's house when it happened, and then Walker sued them, right? First of all, you could really sneak some stuff past the news in 1997. Like, I had not heard of this until very, very recently, like when people started talking about Chauncey getting the job with the Trailblazers. That was the first time I'd heard it. Jason Kidd, as many know, like caught a charge, and I think he pled guilty to an incident involving his being violent toward his then wife. And if you remember those Nets teams, you remember it, because I'll never forget that when he played in Boston, somebody had a poster that it would look like a retired jersey, except it was a white tank top and had Kidd 5 and it said wife beater underneath. You know, like at that time, the fact that Jason Kidd had beaten his wife was simply something to use as fodder at the arena. But he had about 10 more years in his career after that, like I think over a decade. He has worked 2 head coaching jobs. He is now an assistant with the Los Angeles Lakers. And in both cases, there was a lot of discussion about whether those gentlemen should be allowed to have head coaching jobs given what their pasts were. And with the Mavericks, it became extra awkward because the Mavericks had that toxic culture that they had to deal with. And it seemed shocking that they would then like chance it for a guy that a lot of people don't even think is a very good coach and then, you know, bring this together. So these things all happen at the same time. I imagine many of you saw the awkward Chauncey Billups press conference where the Trailblazers basically said, you're going to have to take our word for it, which, when people are asking you questions, clearly they're not just taking your word for it, because then they wouldn't ask questions, right? Nobody's just taking your word for it. Somebody asked a question about, I think it was Jason Quick of The Athletic. Chauncey Billups tried to answer, but no, the PR representative. She, who I don't even think she works on the basketball side. I think she works on like the corporate side. She jumped in and stopped the question, which just looked really bad for everybody and gave an impression to a lot of people that these teams don't care about the issue of sexual assault, or consider the fact that having someone in a visible position who has been accused of sexual assault could perhaps be triggering to fans that they have. And now that I've gotten all of that out of there, this was my question that I had in the group chat was, and I asked this sincerely, if you don't think it's okay for these dudes to be head coaches, why is it okay for them to be assistant coaches?
I can't defend that, but I would guess that the defense is, to your point, that if you're concerned about triggering people, assistant coach is not the face of your franchise. Assistant coaches, they don't have the camera on assistant coaches. They don't do interviews. Like, that would be the argument. Or if you're being offended by them ever being on the staff, then the question is, should they never work again? Or maybe being a coach is a somewhat public facing job, even at assistant. So maybe they should have some more. And I feel like it's so hard to have these conversations because it comes with so much history and context that you can't put into every line that comes out of your mouth.
Right.
But I think that's the best way they would defend why it's acceptable to have an assistant coach and not a head coach.
Yeah, like I think we're operating strictly off feel. And I don't mean this in any snide or judgmental way, right? I think legitimately, does this feel right to you is what's hitting people. And it doesn't feel right to a lot of people to see someone accused of these things and then see them prosper, right? Like, to feel like they're doing well, it doesn't feel right. But, like, I don't know what to do on the Chauncey Billups situation because I did not become aware of it until 24 years later. Like, I personally am not in a position to go report this thing out. There's a woman involved in this who probably doesn't feel like reliving whatever happened under those circumstances. I just had no clue. It was like, it felt like a circumstance, like, after Me Too happened and people like, well, you remember this one thing. But we had honestly, collectively forgotten about it at the time. And that doesn't mean that there's no reason to go revisit it. But there should be institutions who are capable of going and doing these things. And that, to me, seems to be what really jumps out in this is there's no institutional trust. And by the way, nor should there be. There's no institution that we should trust on its handling and resolution of cases of sexual assault. Like, we hear the grand jury did not indict, and we can't even really do nothing with that because that kind of thing happens so many times where, you know, in circumstances under which this has actually happened. And it feels like for a lot of people, the closest they can hope for is that somebody won't give you a job. There's so much unpunished sexual assault that goes on and so many things that happen to women that go, and that we're looking for just anybody to come in here and do something at some point. And the basketball teams are like, no, not us. Not if there's some gray. And like with Chauncey, have you met Chauncey?
Oh, yeah. The last show that we did, I believe we were talking about whether he was going to get hired. And I said the words, I love Chauncey Billups. Because yes. I spent a little bit of time around him. We were in Denver. He is a great dude in my experience to be around. But that is certainly not going to have me jumping to defend somebody like I know him. Like like that.
No. That ain't to go get the cape. But part of what's going on here that's kind of interesting is what you said is the consensus opinion. Yeah. On Chauncey Billups, right? However, we've heard too many stories about too many people who fit that description. So that's like, I hear somebody say that, and all I can say is, oh, okay. Somebody in that story with Billups is lying big. I don't know who it is that is doing it, but I also don't know, like, if at some point we got, like, the macro sample says women do not make this up. The macro sample, overwhelmingly, by the way, says that if a woman accuses a man of such things or men of such things, that thing happened. Except that's in theory. I don't know what I'm supposed to do in real life, because what we can't have is a world where we're just like, as long as somebody accuses you, you got to go down for that, because that's like a moral hazard problem. Like, there's a real danger in how we deal with everything on that. But I don't know what to do because I can't blame people. Right? Especially when they see a basketball team who doesn't realize Chauncey Billups got to answer those questions. Yeah. He has to sit up there, regardless of how many of them there are. If you can't trust him to answer the questions, you couldn't trust him to hire him.
Right. The fact that the victim or the alleged victim, make sure I use the right terminology in this case, is nameless and faceless brings another dynamic to this. Because, again, my initial instinct, and I'll be completely forthright with you, was my initial instinct when I heard this stuff about Chauncey, and I didn't hear about it in 97. I didn't hear about it when we was in Denver. I never heard about it. I didn't hear about it. We got ESPN. I didn't hear about it until a couple of days ago. My initial instinct was when the word got to me, was like, oh man, couldn't have been. Couldn't have been. Like, that's my internal like reaction. And then I start reading the stuff and I'm like, I don't know. And then I start realizing I don't really know these people. And I had that, I guess, awareness to go the next step, to acknowledge that I don't really know somebody and that I, because I can't put a face to this person, like I'm maybe predisposed to not want to believe them and want to root for the best for somebody I think I like. But then I had the awareness to like consciously force myself away from that. And I don't think that most people have that, especially when you know somebody, you know, like your instinct is, and you're in a situation where I'm like, I hope, I root for this not to be true, obviously.
Right.
But also, I exist in this world and this time and all the stuff that you're talking about, all the history, like that's something that I'm aware of. But it's impossible not to let that impact the way that we view this.
And we'll never know in all likelihood if it's true because, again, the institutions that you have to be able to trust to handle these matters are not trustworthy on these matters. And so I had a lot of people, because I said that with Billups, one of the few things I tweeted over the vacation, but I said about Billups was, as what I just said earlier, he's got to be able to answer those questions, period. You know, like if this comes up, like even if he has not had to answer them in a long time, in order for you to take this job at this level of visibility, you have to be able to answer these, at least at the introductory press conference, right? But I had people pointing out, there's like, yo, you know, they just try to take the black man down, which, I mean, I could see why you might say that, but I am not comfortable using this as the time to make that point. But you know what was going on at the same time as we had these questions about Kid and these questions? And Kid's a different one where I don't know what we're supposed to do because that man got busted, paid the costs, took the public stuff that happened at the time. I don't know how long you're supposed to litigate it. You know, like, I really don't know how long you're supposed to. But as all of that was going on, you know what else is going on? The Marv Albert retirement tour. And I didn't see nobody bring up what happened with Marv. And so for some of you who are younger, you may not fully understand this. Like, anything about somebody's Gabe's age, I don't know if it's possible for you to understand what a big deal Marv Albert used to be, right? Like Marv Albert is, without question, the best basketball play-by-play man there has ever been. Marv Albert used to come on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson doing the Albert Achievement Awards. He did football games. He did everything. But I don't think there probably was not a more universally like liked figure in sports media for their jobs than Marv Albert. He was the voice of the Knicks, all of this. And in 1997, remember I told you that number would come back, Marv Albert caught some charges. I don't remember the particulars for sexual assault. But at the time, the sexual assault wasn't the story. It was the details of the story that involved him wearing like panties, women's underwear. That was the detail, because the homophobia of the time allowed you to just be out in front with those things. But that was the big part of the story. So Marv goes to trial. He denies all the allegations, and his alleged victim, well, not even alleged because he got convicted, the victim came to trial and testified. You know, Marv's people are like, look, we're going to get you off of this. And so they did the whole big show of having all the family, you know, kids, wife, everybody sitting in the front row. And they got a front row seat for an episode of Yo Daddy is a Freak and Sexually Assaulted Somebody. Like, it was all the details. And in the end, the only thing that Marv really pushed back on was the allegation that what set him off, because he got violent with the woman, like bit holes in her back, like all of this stuff.
That's the main detail that I never forget.
Yeah, he bit holes in her back. But the thing he pushed back on was the allegation that what set him off was that a third wheel was supposed to show up, but he couldn't make it.
Yep.
Just that's what all of that was. And so about maybe 10 years ago, somewhere in there, Deadspin went back and was like revisited it. And it was interesting again because the tenor of the time had changed and everything else. But Marv did this victory tour and nobody felt the need to break. And he's convicted. And so Marv Albert was the voice of the NBA on NBC. NBC immediately fired him because he told them there was nothing to it. And then that happened. They fired him. But they brought him back. And for the last couple years of NBC having the basketball contract, he was Marv Albert. And then after that, ABC and ESPN got the contract. I don't know who made the decision, but he ain't never worked on this network. He has not done over-the-air national basketball since that happened, right? But he was that guy. Like, he paid a cost. There was a cost that was paid, but it don't look like it, right?
Right.
And I don't know if it's fair to say that the cost was enough. Like, I'm not getting into that. I'm just saying that there was a knockdown on the chain where Marv is not Mike Breen now, you know? Like, there was a knockdown on that chain. But still, we just all appreciated having Marv Albert for the end of this basketball season. Nobody felt the need to bring it up.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. And I certainly, I did a couple shows where we talked about the Billups and kid stuff. And I certainly got people coming at me on social media about you trying to bring a black man down. And it's like, if you want to fight for black people, there are plenty of black people to fight for. And there are plenty of moments where you need to fight. But when it puts you in a position where you are being like adversarial or playing defense against progress of another group, then maybe that is not the place to be, because we have to remember, while we don't know who did what to whom in the Billups situation, there was a rape kit, a brutal rape kit. That woman was raped. So like, I don't know who did it. I don't know any of the details, but like, that is something that we cannot walk out. And I think the topic of one of the shows where I was talking about is like, and we had a debate on what the question should be, but the question was, is this a good look for the NBA? Because I felt like that was the only thing I could definitively say was, yes, this is a bad look for the NBA. Yeah. That's all I could definitively say. But in the Marv Albert case, like, we live in a world with plenty of exceptions, and those exceptions lean in directions of white men overwhelmingly. So I'm not surprised by that.
Well, have you looked up the Trevor Bauer story?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yo! So I got a theory on why the Trevor Bauer story has not been a bigger story. And that is, the last couple of weeks, the talker shows on ESPN, like the kind of shows that I do, haven't really been on, because there's Euro, there's Wimbledon, you know, when it comes into the time windows. Because if you have not seen this, as Trevor Bauer pitches for the Dodgers, there is a woman got a restraining order against him. And there's a lot going on there. I'll just tell you two details. One, the woman alleges that he used her own hair to choke her until she was unconscious, and that had sex with her while she was not conscious, among other things. But the one that jumped that, like, as I'm here, I'm just like, oh, this was the one. She sent him a text message to be like, hey, you gave me a concussion last night. And he was just like, oh my goodness, are you okay? Like, his lawyer's response to this was like, nah, this is just what she was into, right? Like, it was the old she liked a rough defense that people use in these times, except a concussion? A concussion? And so the Dodgers had to put him on like some kind of 7-day leave list or something like that as they were trying to figure this out. But this dude is famous. Like, I understand that baseball ain't what it was, but he's a guy who people know pitching for one of the most visible teams in baseball in one of the biggest markets in America. And there doesn't seem to be like a surrounding media scandal or anything around that. And that blows my mind. If for no other reason, then people love freaky stories about athletes. But they're like, that's normally enough just to get people talking about it. I've seen so little in the public space about this one. And I just don't understand how that's possible.
Yeah, I wish I had an explanation for it. I don't either. Like, it's, I'm with you. So like that story got sent to me, not that I hadn't seen it otherwise, but it got sent to me a bunch. Like, why y'all not going after him?
Good question.
You tell me.
Right. Like, I wasn't at work. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like it did not come up in that time. But I just think, like, something you and I just talked about before, which is the saddest thing. And I think it's a macro level thing across the board on a lot of stuff. I think it manifests itself with the Sha'Carri Richardson story, too, which is the general lack of trust that people have in institutions. Like, there is hardly anything at this point that people believe in or that people respect, right? Like, and I get on so many levels why they don't. You know, it's like, not like I'm looking at people like, come on now, you can't be like that. But I'm like, nah, I kind of see it.
Yeah. The Sha'Carri Richardson story is interesting, too, because like I found myself, interestingly, the lines along these stories split differently, because I feel like our society is so very divided and you can like tell who somebody voted for with TV shows they watch based on what side of a sports debate they're on. Like, you can find all that out based on that. But every now and then some of these stories pop up and I'm surprised where people land. And I think when there is a black man with a 20 plus year old sexual assault allegation pop up when he's about to get a job, that cuts across different lines.
Right.
Like, you end up with the wrong allies in certain situations if you're, you know what I mean? Because like, I felt like what I was saying about that was like, I don't know, but this is a difficult thing. The institutions haven't figured out how to handle it. And then I look around and people are like, you hate black people. And then I see people defending me in my mentions. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to be with you. And some of that happened with the Sha'Carri Richardson thing, too, where it's like, if she wanted to smoke weed and get caught as an act of social defiance, I am with you. Marijuana, Luther King Jr. I'm fine with that. However, these are kind of the rules. I feel bad. I wish that it was legal, but like, and I understand marijuana is not a performance enhancing drug, but as a former professional athlete, sports is stressful.
Yeah.
Be real nice.
Yeah.
Smoke a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, there are other questions that it's just hard for me to completely. And as a black person, like, my first instinct is like, I got to defend her, but she not even trying to defend herself.
She's
like, I messed up.
Yo.
And I'm like, yeah, you messed up. Why are these people trying to defend you?
Like I say, again, I think it's crumbling faith in institutions, right? Like, that's what I think it comes down to, is because this is not like crumbling faith in the veracity of the drug test, like not that kind of faith in the institution, but it's faith in the institution in the sense of, why do you have this prohibition here in the first place? Which, by the way, fair question, right? I think the answer is probably more complex than people want it to be. Like, we got to remember, our American sensibilities are not the same as everybody else's sensibilities. Like, let me tell you something, Sha'Carri Richardson had that stressful moment in Japan, she wouldn't have been able to find no weed over there, dog. They don't play no games when it comes to that. You know, like, this is a world thing as much as anything else. But I think, so I did a Joy Reid show on MSNBC the other night, and I don't think Joy expected the answers that I gave her about Sha'Carri Richardson, because for her it was kind of, she felt like there was like the Olympics are taking aim at black women. Now, of course, the problem with this is all these cases are like different things, right? Like there's the thing with the swim caps for black women that FINA, the swimming body, has said they can't allow because no one's ever worn a swim cap that big. That's because y'all been keeping us out of every pool from the Holiday Inn to the Olympics, you know, for the longest. That's why it's never happened. And then Gwen Berry, who seems to be getting antagonized about her national anthem stance. And by the way, the governing bodies like the USOC is not against her, although you never know because of what happened at the trials. And then you have Sha'Carri Richardson, and none of those are the Olympics, right? Like there's no individual body who is doing this. Like if you want to make the argument of like broad sweeping systemic racism being at play, correct. But like one body is not inflicting these things upon black women in this way. But with Sha'Carri Richardson, she smoked some weed and got caught. I don't really know what you're supposed to do with that. Now with Joy, I made the point, and this I do say this about Sha'Carri Richardson. Like if she was too big to fail, then somebody will figure something out. I was like a guy like Lance Armstrong, they were throwing his test results out. And she's like, well, why can't they do that for her? And I was like, oh, is that a real question? Like, no, this is not. I don't believe that this is the solution. But I think that for a lot of people, it just felt very familiar because it does seem like in some of these cases, women are being picked on. But it does feel like, damn, this ain't even no big deal. We like her. You know, she's, you know, we're sad for her given the circumstance she's in. Why can't we just let this slide? And I see why maybe they can't. But since people don't trust anything, everything then feels personal, even something like this, which seems to be pretty red letter law.
So two things jump out to me is this reminds me of the OJ trial, which is like, you know what I mean? Like at that point, I was in like middle school and facts didn't matter. Evidence didn't matter. Like I was on like Team OJ, like free this black man. Like that's where I was. That's where my mind was. As an adult now, I could put a lot of other context into it. And that's what it feels like. And some of this stuff where it's like, none of this other stuff, none of this other context, none of this other stuff matters for some people. And then they like concoct an argument around that. But then the other side of that, that like scares me is, you know, that I guess the theory is people get more conservative as they get older, or maybe the world becomes more liberal as they get older. I get nervous whenever I find myself on the opposite side of the people that I tend to find myself with. Yes. And I'm like, you know what? Am I just saying to Sha'Carri Richardson, there's a right way to do this? You know, like it feels kind of like that, because if she was trying to make some sort of statement about it, then it'd be a different story. But it also kind of feels like, and I think I've talked to you about this before, I back in the day when I used to go on First Take a lot more, I would be on there with Stephen A and race stuff would come up. And Stephen A would always, or would most often be aiming his advice or criticism, however you want to frame it, at the athletes. And I would aim a lot of mine at like team owners and stuff. Mm-hmm. And my point was to him was both of the things that we are saying are valid, but we both agree that the athletes aren't wrong in this case, but they have to understand how the game is played would be kind of the point he was making.
Right.
And I would be like, well, maybe that's fine. And I would tell my son, like, you got to work twice as hard. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to go in front of the white people and be like, my son got to work twice as hard. Right. Like, I felt like when we're on TV, we have this opportunity. We should not be admonishing the people who are in the system. We should be admonishing the people who do control these institutions, frankly. So I guess that's the question I'm asking myself. But Sha'Carri answered it. Like the question I'm asking myself is, should I be aiming all of this at WADA or at the Olympic organization for even having this rather than saying Sha'Carri do the right thing? But she came up and was like, I did the wrong thing. I should have done that.
Yeah. And here's my thing. You don't have to chastise her, right? Like I remember when I flunked out of graduate school, right? Which for me was the probably greatest challenge to my ego and confidence there'd ever been. I never believed there was nothing I couldn't do, right? But I always remember how unfazed by it my parents were. Like, they were worried for me, but, like, I was worried that everything everybody had ever told me before had been proven to not be true. And nobody around me, like, felt that way. Like, it would have felt less significant to me if they had been like, you know, they did you wrong, right? It felt more significant that they were just like, nah, man, but we love you anyway, right? Like, we still got you anyway. And so with her, the way I look at it is, this is a great time to raise her up. You know what I mean? Like, she was in a very difficult and stressful situation. One of my partners made a good point. He's like, yo, man, if she got to smoke weed like right before the meet like that, maybe she don't need to be at the Olympics. Like, she might got some stuff to work out. Fair question, right? Yeah, but I think it's more significant for us to say, hey, you made a mistake and that mistake is hurting you more than it's going to hurt anybody else, but we still down for you. Like, I think that that is, to me, a more significant way to show support for her than it is to act like you don't know what the deal is. And I just felt like I just had a whole lot of people that were approaching this like they did not know what the deal is. Like, and they're rigid about these things kind of sort of across the board when it happens. But, like, I got an email from one of these shows last night, and I turned it down. I didn't want to get on. And this is after they didn't put on the relay team. And the producer was like, yo, we want to talk about the injustice against Sha'Carri Richardson. And I'm like, nah, I ain't going on this show. Because, like, we don't have to be so dramatic, right? Like, we can talk about the silliness of the provisions and all these other things, but we ain't got to be so dramatic. Now, also, what you need to know is the NFL, if I'm not mistaken, their threshold for marijuana is lower than WADA's. Like, there are levels on all of this. And then the NCAA's, which is lower than the one for pilots. Pilots! Yes!
When the last time you heard about somebody in college football player getting suspended for marijuana? Like, there was people with like real, real problems.
Yeah, yeah. That's because they let the schools do it for themselves,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
I feel like Honey Badger is the last time a big name player.
But you know what it is? It's because the NCAA doesn't run any of the major football events, right? So mm-hmm. I remember That's Mitch fair. McGarry, who used to play at Michigan, he tested positive in the NCAA tournament. It basically... He was going to go pro anyway, but he had to because he had like some crazy long suspension waiting on him behind this. Like I say, the common theme, we don't trust anything. We don't trust anybody. And so when all this stuff happens, it's going to then go fit, no matter who you are, it seems, some macro level narrative that overall is probably true. Like, we can't shoehorn everything into these places. And the other day, you talked about, like, you know, who's on the same side as you. I definitely had some people on the same side as me about Sha'Carri Richardson that I was like, I don't know about this. And I had one professor, woman I kind of know a little bit, but not really. And she questioned my ability to grasp the notion of intersectionality. And this is one thing I got, right? Okay, I ain't no professor. I just said I flunked out of grad school, but I know a lot of them, right? I can hang in them rooms or whatever. I don't know why people walking and chewing gum at the same time ain't that difficult. Like, people who can't do intersectionality is not because they can't. It's often because they don't want to. Like, it's not that hard to grasp. And in this case, my thing is, yes, in the macro, there's an antagonism toward Black women. But when something happens like this, the macro cannot dictate the conclusion about the micro. It can't, because otherwise what you're saying is anytime something like this happens, it's just the machine coming down, and that's not always going to be the case. But the thing was, I wasn't about to like reply to her or argue with her about it, because all that was going to do, because I looked, the bots were in force. All that was going to do is sick the worst people of the internet who don't agree with what I'm saying. They agree with the side that I'm taking. But they don't actually agree with what I'm saying. And now they would come out here and harass this woman if I decided I'm going to come back and argue with you over this in return. You see what I'm saying? Like,
there's so many things in that you said that I want to address. I don't think we have the time to do any of them. But fundamentally, you completely understanding how Twitter works is important. And somebody that I know very well over the past couple of days does not understand how Twitter works. And they put themselves in a real bad spot because they didn't see, like, this is not the place to do those things. And I'm glad that you grasped that, because what would have happened there would not have been fruitful. It would have been embarrassing for one or both of you and started a fire that neither of you wanted to be a part of. So I'm glad you had that restraint. But I also wanted to bring up, you sent me a book, it might have been a year ago right now, and I didn't realize... I'm sure you weren't thinking about, you couldn't foresee us having this conversation, mm-hmm. but the book was about, it was an economics book about institutions.
Yes.
And that's really kind of helped me to work through some of these things, is understanding how institutions are formed and how they interact with society and what happens to people in that. So, like, all that being said, the institutions in our country are racist, and the institutions in the world right. are racist because of their history. So, like, if you want to be on the air quotes pro Sha'Carri Richardson side, you should use this as a jumping off point to talk about those other things. But you are making a mistake because I think about, you were talking about how your parents treated you in that moment. I'm a father, so I think about that sometimes too. Is like, in these moments, what would I say to my kids? So if my son was in this situation, I would not say, the Olympics is a historically racist institution and they wouldn't do this to no white person. Why are they doing you like that? I'd be like, bruh, I love you. You f*** up.
Mm-hmm.
You f*** up. We're going to work through this. That's it. And if there was a different situation, like there, I can imagine lots of other situations where I would be like, this institution, this school, this team, this parent, like they messed up. You ain't do nothing wrong. Let me give you a hug and we gonna go take care of business.
Right.
But this to me is not that case.
No, and I got all the respect in the world for her. Like I really came away with that. Like, yo, you stood tall in this moment. And yeah, no, just, it was an interesting 2 weeks while we were gone, Dominique. Do we have anything funny we can go back to like kind of lighten it just a little bit as we get to the end of it?
I don't know. I mean, my funny comes in response to things you say. You can't just put me on the spot.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think. Like, there had to be something else, like, kind of upbeat, you know what I'm saying, that went down while we were not out here.
I don't know. That guy is pitching and hitting home runs at the same time.
Yo, that's impressive. That's really, nice. Really impressive.
Don't nobody really care.
Yeah.
But we kind of care.
Yeah, that's dope. That's, damn. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we could talk about, hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time, Foxworth Fridays. Dominique Foxworth, thanks so much for joining us here. Man.
Thanks for having me, my friend.
Dude, always a winner, man. Always a winner. Gabe Bassane, Daniel Dopp, and David Presley. We got a lot of people behind the scenes today. Thank you, guys. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. Oh. You only give us 4 stars. What we got?
ESPYs. I'm hosting the ESPYs post show. It's going to be on Twitter. So,
dog, I thought you were saying that you was hosting the ESPYs and it was some kind of Anthony Mackie joke. But
I only look like Anthony Mackie to a certain subset of white folk.
Yeah, that's all I was trying to figure out.
We all look alike.
Right. I was like, damn, yo, Dominique got the ESPY after party, dog. Man, that's what's up.
Oh, man. Me and Kelly Carter. So, yeah, watch that. Make jokes. Enjoy. I think that it's not even on TV. It's on Twitter, but hey, whatever. You guys like Twitter, get on there.
Is that your way of saying, hey, I'm going to be in town this weekend or this week? Is that?
You better believe it. I wasn't going to tell you because you up north, like you all the way in Harlem, and I'm going to be down by the seaport. That's like a day trip.
Might figure something out.
All right, let's get together.
There we go. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You can give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.